7:04 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program.
Can you dig it?
Sure can. Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst with NHL Network and MSG Networks, is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Final week of the NHL regular season is upon us. So much to be decided. For the New York teams, the Islanders can clinch a playoff spot with a win in any fashion tonight. The New York Rangers can clinch the President's Trophy with a win in any fashion tonight. And those two teams played a real fun game over the weekend. Our next guest was watching it. Joining us now, as mentioned, former NHL defenseman Thomas Hickey here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Thomas. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm good. Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot to be decided here in the next couple days. So I've got my eyes on that. In particular, a game in New Jersey tonight. I'll be taking the train in later, seeing the Islanders a chance to clinch, like you said, with a win in any fashion. So, so much left to be decided. But at least for the New York Islanders, they control their fate, unlike some of these other teams. But it's getting down to the wire here.
I think sometimes I refer to things as a roller coaster too often, but the Islanders season truly, especially these last 2 months, after Patrick Waugh's come on board, they had a 6-game win streak in late February that stretched into early March, followed by a 6-game losing streak, followed by another 6-game winning streak, which came to an end on Saturday with that shootout loss to the Rangers. Whatever the case with the streaks, like, the bottom line is that the Islanders are in. How exactly have they been able to do this rally and make the playoffs under Patrick Waugh?
I'm not sure. Honestly, it's been so volatile. It's been so up and down. This is, I think, unlike any other year that this group has had, because, you know, even last year, it was late when they got in, final weekend of the season, but it was a little bit more of a gradual, steady thing. And this year it's been completely different. I mean, especially with the coaching change and that taking some time to sort of settle in. But up to 2.5-3 weeks ago, it looked like they were dead and out. But I think this year, with how poor the Metro has been, really surprised me. You know, I think for years it's sort of been the strongest division in hockey, or at least on most years it's, you know, you've got a bunch of teams that you could see doing damage in the playoffs. This year, it's so much different. And for the Islanders, they just sort of stuck with it. They're an inconsistent group, but as the other teams sort of faltered, they got better and better. And I think the timing was just perfect. And now, points in 7 games in a row, it actually looks like a group that I don't think many teams would want to face in the first round, just because they've got a couple goaltenders going. They've got a lot of high-end scoring right at the top of their lineup, and then everything sort of just is falling into place right now for them. So it's been a weird season for sure. I think a tough one for New York Islanders fans, but it's sort of what you're doing right in the moment, and right now things are going really good for them.
What is the identity of that team? Because a few years ago when they were coached by Barry Trotz, we knew what their identity was. They even had a line. It was called the Identity Line. What is the Islanders' identity now?
That's so true. It's a completely different identity. It's not a defense first hockey team anymore. They're not going to smother you and, you know, snuff you out and win 1-0 games anymore. That's really not it. But in saying that, the games that they have won, the 7-game point streak that they've been on, defense has been much better. The identity right now is not like it was before, of a team that's going to forecheck you to death. Right now, it's their high-end players, Barzal, Horvat. They've been phenomenal. This is a group that sort of relies on its top-end guys to perform for them and get good goaltending, but sort of a team that is scary in the sense that you can outplay them maybe for half the game, but lately they haven't given up a ton of quality chances when they've been getting outplayed. So maybe one of those teams, the identity would be one of those teams that hangs around just long enough, and then its top guys will strike you and get you, and that includes the goaltenders. So not a great identity to have, but it is something that's been working for them.
I mentioned the New York Rangers earlier. They beat the Isles over the weekend, so they can clinch the President's Trophy tonight with a win of any fashion. That'll put them past the Carolina Hurricanes, who are the only other team really challenging right now. With this Rangers team, all due respect to a terrific regular season that's going to likely see them finish top in the standings, is their season going to be purely defined by whether they can go a little bit further, and by mean a little bit, a lot further in the playoffs than they have in years past?
Absolutely. I think without a question for me, especially after last year, they had a good year and then you lose New Jersey in the playoffs. It's, you know, tough for a lot of teams being in a big market and having those expectations. But if you do win a President's Trophy, or let's just say you're 1 point shy of it, for this New York Rangers group, the foundation's there. You know, obviously they can come back and be as good next year, but the question's going to remain, what can they do in the playoffs? And for that group, if you don't go 2-3 rounds and show that you can really contend and compete, I think is the biggest thing for them. And there's been moments that they've banded together and look more like a team that they have in the past. But you got to start asking questions if this group can't make a bit of a serious run. And for as good as things have gone, you want the players that have been elite during the regular season to show up in the playoffs as well. So I think there's a ton of pressure on them. It's not enough to make it or to win a President's Trophy. I think their season's going to be defined about what they do in the playoffs.
Who would be your favorite in a series between Tampa Bay and Boston?
That is so difficult because those are two teams that I continue to say that every time I doubt them, they make me look bad. But from what I've seen out of Tampa in the past month of hockey, I've been extremely impressed. And that is no consolation prize for being the second best team in the conference points-wise in Boston, yeah, and potentially ending up with a Tampa matchup. It's just not fair. But Vasilevsky is back. You know, he had that surgery at the start of the year. It took some time. And with how well Kucherov's playing, I mean, look at Stamkos' numbers in the past 3 weeks as well. He might hit 40 goals once again. They're firing right now, and I think it's scary to think that they're more rested than they have been in probably 4 years, just with having the first round loss last year to Toronto. So I'd go with Tampa right now, and reluctant to not choose either of those teams to win a playoff series, but Tampa looks as good as I've seen them in a couple of years.
How does it change in your mind? I mean, the big question with Boston heading into this year was going to be how are they going to do without Patrice Bergeron and I suppose to a lesser extent David Krejci. Well, how are they going to do with, you know, Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle as their top two centers? And the answer has been pretty well, actually. Does that change at all in the playoffs when you have these best of seven series, when there are matchups? I mean, they're going to match up against a Tampa Bay team that has Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli as their top two centers, and I think you'd take those two over Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, with all due respect to those two, every day of the week.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The one thing I will say about Charlie Coyle is he's stepped up, and I don't really care about his production as much as I care about that when he digs in, and I think now with a bigger role, I don't mind seeing him match up against anyone, really. He's big, he's strong, he's physical, he's got a good offensive side to him too. So that's a guy that's really stepped into a bigger role and impressed me. So we'll call him your first-line center, second-line center. Maybe it doesn't fit the offense that you're looking for, but he's played really well. But yeah, in Zacha, really good player, right? But not a guy that you've thought of in that position for a long time. And then even throughout their lineup, you know, Boquist is a guy that was a cast-off from New Jersey. They've sort of rotated people in on their fourth line, and Geeky's done really well for them. But I think the Boston Bruins, more than any other team in the NHL, at least over the last decade, it's not really about the personnel. It's about the personality of the team, and they all seem to play the same way, and that's what makes them good. And I think even with Bergeron and Krejci there was years when they had a bunch of guys that I would go in to play them, look at the roster. I don't know many of these guys, and I'm a pretty well-read player. I haven't seen a lot of these guys that they drafted, and guys just play that system. And maybe because of Krejci and Bergeron and Chara, the sort of infrastructure that they have and how well they play as a group, it sort of takes away from not having the high-end guys in their lineup. But certainly it's going to be a bigger task this year with less center depth than they've had before.
We're speaking to Thomas Hickey here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Thomas, of course, former NHL defenseman, now with MSG and NHL Networks as an NHL analyst. We're looking at that race for the final wildcard spot in the East, Thomas, and somehow Philadelphia Flyers are still sticking around. Now, the percentages are working against them with just one game left in the regular season, but they're still in it. And this is almost, I would say, in spite of their head coach at times, especially over the last month of the season. Now, you had a long NHL career. You played under a bunch of different head coaches. What did you think of the way that Torts went about, I'll call it trying to motivate, but trying to motivate his team down the stretch? And ultimately, it seems like they might end up falling short of the playoffs because of it.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Like, I think there's times this year that if you would ask me who should win the Jack Adams, John Tortorella's name would be right up there. And then at the same time, as things have crumbled, I think it's human nature for us to question, okay, was it too much? Did he make the mistakes? Well, they're in the position they are for a reason, right? I think it's a group that's overachieved all year. The only thing that I think it would be fair for me to comment on is the whole Couturier, I don't want to call it a saga, but I didn't really love the way that was handled. And they came out and won a couple games in a row, beat really good teams. And since that point on, it's been not so good for them. Look, they simply don't have the goaltending, and don't really have the depth, and somehow they've treaded above water. But, I guess the only thing I would say is you don't want the coach being the main storyline, and John Tortorella has, but the only thing I really have an issue with this year is the way he dealt with Couturier. But this is a guy that, he's really confident in who he is and how he approaches things. And I don't think he's really changed, or he's looking for more headlines. It's just, we're paying more attention to him because he's done a job with the team that on paper really wasn't that good and overachieved so much. So if they find a way in, full credit to him. And if they don't, I think it's easy to point to him and say he's the reason they didn't. But I think without being in that room, without knowing, it's not really fair to say. But he's a guy that's going to get Jack Adams votes if this team sneaks into the playoffs. So it's all over the map with him. But I think it's a group that's really overachieved. But sometimes you wonder if it's too much of a storyline every day. But I continue to find myself being confused at how to look at that whole situation.
Speaking of coaches, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto said of Auston Matthews' pursuit of 70 goals, that's a major distraction. It doesn't help us what we're trying to accomplish on the ice, but it's exciting. And it's especially when he gets to 69, you can see it. It's growing. The fans are excited and he's happy for the fans, but him calling it a major distraction and the fact it doesn't help us, what do you think of that?
I think that's just a coach being blunt and honest. And I don't mind that. I think, the one thing I've learned about Sheldon Keefe over the last couple of years is, he's dug his heels in when it comes to moving his lineups around or benching star players. He's firm with everything he says. And I think for him, that's fair. I think for the game of hockey, for the position I'm in, I mean, it's a great distraction. I don't think it's a bad distraction at all, but for a Toronto team that's just trying to get primed and into a playoff spot, it's a lot of noise. But if there's one thing that we've learned about Auston Matthews is he can compartmentalize and he can still go out and play good defensive hockey without sacrificing anything. So I don't think it's a big deal for Toronto, especially sitting where they are right now. It's a group that's not going to move up in the standings. It's not going to move down in the standings. It's totally fine for me. So I think it'd be great for the game if Matthews gets to 70. And as much as it might be a distraction for Sheldon Keefe and the media around the group, at least he's got a guy in Matthews that seems to be unfazed by all these things.
Who's your Hart Trophy winner?
That's such a tough one. I mean, I've talked about it, and I think the biggest thing is who ends up number four on the ballots, because that's going to be the guy that gets cheated more than any. It depends how you vote, right? Like, is it the most valuable player? Is that what everyone's voting for? Because the guy who wins the Ted Lindsay is the most outstanding player, and the guy that wins the most valuable player, to me, are probably going to be two completely different players this year. But with how good Nathan MacKinnon's been, I'd have a tough time not having him at the top of my ballot if I were to be voting.
One more before we let you go. That final wild card spot, as mentioned, Washington, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh all still in the hunt. At the end of the day, who do you think's the second wild card in the East?
Another tough one there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pittsburgh find a way in here. They're going to need help. They're going to need other people to give up some points. I could see them getting in that spot. At the same time, it's such a ripe schedule for Detroit. You get Montreal back-to-back, home and home, and Montreal's not a pushover, but things can't line up any better for you if you are the Red Wings. So those are the two teams that I'm looking up. Washington's got a tough schedule ahead, and they do play Philly on that final game, so those teams are taking points off each other. So I'll say Pittsburgh or Detroit, and right now with the advantage of 1 point that Detroit has, I would say that they're in the driver's seat.
The final week of the NHL's regular season is upon us. Thomas, thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy this final week. Should be a lot of fun. We'll do this again come playoff time.
For sure, guys. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Yep, thanks. Appreciate it. That's Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst for MSG and NHL Networks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Real quick from Sports Club stats, the percentages are the New York Islanders at 95%. The Islanders can clinch a playoff spot tonight with a victory of any kind over the New Jersey Devils. From there, it's the Red Wings with a 66.8% chance. The Capitals at 17.2%. The Penguins at 16.3%. And then the Flyers on the long shot of the bunch at 4.7%. So if you're just going to go on the numbers, again, courtesy of sportsclubstats.com, it'll be the Red Wings, who could have been eliminated on Saturday with a regulation loss in Toronto, but they won in overtime, and now they've got a 67% chance to make the postseason.
Okay, let's talk about the Canucks week coming up, maybe even week and a bit coming up. Yes. They play the Calgary Flames tomorrow. They can clinch the division with a point against the Calgary Flames. So there is a possibility that the Canucks could go into Winnipeg on Thursday, and that game could be meaningless for the Canucks, and frankly, it could be meaningless for the Winnipeg Jets.
It means nothing to nobody.
Because the Winnipeg Jets could, in theory, have second spot clinched in the division, which means they would have home ice advantage against the Colorado Avalanche, and those teams are guaranteed to play each other. That's the first official matchup in the NHL.
The
NHL,
only one right now.
The only one that is 100% going to happen is Colorado and Winnipeg. Now, when will game one be for the Vancouver Canucks? I had first started hearing this over the weekend, and I guess Elliot Friedman put it out there on the most recent 32 Thoughts that Elliot, and this is what I've been hearing too, thinks the Canucks game one at Rogers Arena will be on Tuesday.
So a week tomorrow.
So that's interesting in a number of ways, because the Canucks would have a good break, and that means more rest for the likes of Thatcher Demko to sharpen up his game. And whether or not he plays in Calgary, I imagine he's going to play against Calgary on Tuesday at Rogers Arena. And then maybe depending how that start goes, he may or may not play the game in Winnipeg. But probably just one game for Thatcher Demko before the playoffs, I imagine. And then so the Canucks would play their final game on the 18th. And then they'd have a bunch of days off.
Five.
And game one would be on the 23rd. Mm-hmm. That's a Tuesday. Now, the playoffs overall start on Saturday, the 20th. So we go 3 days without the Canucks playing and everyone else playing playoff games. Well, no, not everyone else, but a lot of teams playing playoffs. Mm-hmm. And here's maybe an even more interesting thing. Let's say the Canucks do get the Nashville Predators
yep.
in the first round. The Nashville Predators wrap up their season tonight.
Right.
The Preds play their final game of the regular season tonight in Pittsburgh.
Huge game for the Penguins.
And then they would, if they play the Canucks, have, what, 8 days off?
8 days off, yeah. Canucks would have five. Nashville would have eight.
Yeah.
It's
so that's a long layoff for both teams to the point where you're like, you like it for the Canucks. That gives them time for the rest. But you're almost kind of like, ugh, if I'm Nashville, I don't know if I want that much time off.
The things that I've heard from various people that work in the broadcasting industry over the weekend is that there's a lot of unanswered questions about when things are going to get going. And a lot of teams that are looking at proposed schedules and saying, a big break for us, like a long break, because the end of this regular season, it gets kind of janky for some teams. Some teams are done early this week, and some teams like the Vancouver Canucks aren't done until the end of the week. And with the series starting at any point, really, there's a lot of I'm hesitant to frame it as consternation, but there's a lot of teams like Nashville, for example. I don't think that they're clamoring at the idea of being off for 8 days, because there's that very fine line where rest becomes rust. You know, you've got a good thing going. You've got momentum. If you're healthy or relatively healthy, you'd like a couple days off. But 8 days in the course of an NHL season, that's the all-star break.
Yeah, especially for like one of the hotter teams, a team that's feeling pretty good about itself.
It's your vibes. It's your momentum. It's your mojo. It just comes to a halt, right? You can only practice so many times. I mean, that's a long vacation. Guys could go to Cabo and come back in 8 days. I mean, I'm not saying they'd do it. I'm not saying they wouldn't either. Anyway, we got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Open segment coming up. If you want to weigh in on anything from Saturday night's big win, 3-1 Vancouver Canucks over Edmonton, do it right now. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. What do you think about the Lindholm, Joshua, and Garland line? Maybe the third line reincarnate. When will Thatcher Demko play? How much will he play? Are you already doing your breakdown of a Nashville-Vancouver opening round series? All this is up for grabs in an open segment coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. How are we all doing out there in listener land? Good? Nice weather this weekend.
It was incredible weather.
It was really nice.
I actually had some friends go to the Vancouver Canadiens game yesterday, and it was like a perfect day at the Nap because you could sit outside in the sun and not worry about getting roasted in the sun.
Yeah. I mean, you still got to be sun smart.
Yeah. But do you know those games that you have, like, it's a nooner, and it's 30 degrees out.
Yeah, you're worrying about dehydration.
Good luck.
You've had seven beers. You're like, I've made some choices.
You forget the sunscreen like I did that time.
You came
Did you have the leg?
Yeah.
The one leg.
Yeah, my leg had two different shades in it for about 6 months.
Oh, lobster leg coal.
Yeah, that was bad.
That was pretty funny, actually.
Okay. Halford and Brough of the morning, real quick. Let's take care of some business. Brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Speaking of beers, hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Speaking of alcoholic beverages, we went to the Vancouver Warriors game. All of us as a show. We did a show outing on Saturday.
That place has a lot of energy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That place is popping.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about professional lacrosse. It never stops.
Mm-hmm.
Even when there's stoppages, just other stuff picks up the energy.
There's music playing during the play and
they
everything.
They have a band. What were they called? Pink Tuxedo?
Black Pontiac.
Black Pontiac.
Pink Tuxedo. Tuxedo.
I'm so close.
I know. Pink Tuxedo.
The color in there somewhere.
Even though I got the color and item wrong. So they have a live band playing music, playing during the play, in the breaks. It's just we had, all the kids came with us, and it was just
their mascot's cool.
Yeah, but there was
Timber.
It is just constant entertainment. It is a lot of fun, but
it's a much different vibe than a Canucks game.
Like, oh
it's,
yeah,
it's totally different.
Totally, and it's even the most simplistic stuff. Like they had an in seat contest where you have to pass this big cardboard cutout of a can back and forth through your row.
Yeah,
and right. I was deeply into the race.
I was. Like, yeah, the Canucks should adopt that. It's actually really, really fun.
Section 101, row 16. Go, go, go! Like, I was really into it. Right,
party zone behind one of the goalies' nets. Just like it was crazy.
There was a lot of drinking there.
There was a lot of stimulus. There was a lot of stimulus on display. That now I'll say this: Bruff and I may have discovered the biggest drinking hack I've ever seen in my life. They got these things called Cutwaters.
Cutwater margaritas. Yeah, they're 12.5%.
You guys were cut.
I've never experienced such a party in a can in my life.
Yeah, and it only counts as one drink too, so you can get two of them.
If you strategize, you can buy two of them and you're good to go for the entire night.
Some of us.
Well, like I mean, you won't. Put it this way.
Maybe the lightweights.
The
kids were drinking two of them.
The slogan should be Cutwater. It's going to get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
That's it. Like you'll get there. You might need a push with a couple more, but.
And remember, everyone, drink responsibly.
Yeah. But responsibly. I'm not the one making 12.5% in a can. That's them. Anyway, that's a lot of fun.
Okay, I want to go into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Do we have any business to take care of?
I did it already.
Taking care of business?
Yep.
Okay.
And I'll give Cutwater a free plug if they want to send along.
And Black
Pontiac. Right.
This is Halford's way of trying to get free Cutwater.
And songs.
Yeah.
From Black Pontiac.
I need a song written about Halford.
There's an unsigned text that Halford got defensive about, but I think it's worth talking about. There are a lot more, quote-unquote, what-ifs still to be determined that you guys are not discussing. The Canucks can still play LA or Vegas legitimately, and they can still catch Dallas.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. I didn't get defensive. I wrote back, which I thought was polite and very good of me as a host, saying, all due respect, but the Canucks have like a 5-6% chance of catching Dallas for number one, so we're not going to spend a ton of time discussing that.
Right.
I mean, I'm more than happy.
If Dallas loses to St. Louis and the Canucks win their final two games, then the Canucks have caught them. It's possible. You know, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, the Canucks could, I suppose, be the top seed in the Western Conference. That still is on the table, and that would change which wild card team they play. Vegas could still catch the Kings, but most likely at this point, this is all most likely, and we were very sure to say that the only playoff series that is 100% locked in is Colorado and Winnipeg. I hope it's Nashville. I really do, because as well as the Preds have been playing, and, you know, maybe I'm jinxing myself here. Maybe this is our version of we want Florida. But I just, you know, a lot of the times I just look at the lineup, you know, and I'm kind of like, yeah, the Canucks should beat that team.
Uh-huh.
The Canucks should beat that team. Mm-hmm. And I also look at things like goal differential. The Canucks are plus 55. The Preds are plus 23. You know, I would rather play Nashville than LA, which has plus 42. Mm-hmm. Now you can say, well, Vegas only has plus 23, but we all know what Vegas can be when they ramp it up and when they're fully healthy.
So here's the thing with Vegas right now. So they're on 96 points. So they're trailing LA by one, right? And they're trailing Nashville by three. Vegas's final two games of the regular season are both at home, and they are against the lowly Chicago Blackhawks and the lowly Anaheim Ducks. I would say, given what the Vegas Golden Knights need to do, which is play as many of their guys as possible to get some chemistry, because they have some guys coming back from injury, new guys like Hurdle trying to get in the lineup. It seems like they're all systems go. Like they're not resting guys right now. They're playing everybody. I'm going to conservatively suggest that the Vegas Golden Knights are likely to get 4 points from their final two games. I'm just saying it. I think they will. So that puts them at 100.
Yeah.
Now, that could throw some things into arrears. I mean, it could conceivably get them ahead of Nashville, who is on 99 points and only has one game left. I think the more interesting one, I think it's that third spot in the Pacific. I think that's the one that's really up for grabs.
What do you want to see? Do you want to see Vegas Oilers?
My first-round matchups, I'd like to see right now. Winnipeg and Colorado is already taken care of, so that's set.
Do you want to see Canucks and Preds? Yes or
no? I would love to see Canucks and Preds.
Okay, do you want to see Oilers-Vegas?
Yes.
Do you want to see that more?
And I would like to see LA take on Dallas, because whatever. I don't care.
I don't have strong feelings about either team.
You know what? If LA,
not to disrespect them, but like I don't care about them.
At the end of that series, if LA beat Dallas, I'd be like, cool. But if Dallas beat LA, I'd also be like, all right, fine. I don't care. I think Edmonton Vegas first round would be chef's kiss great.
I hate it when you make the sound on the radio. It sounds like
it's a moist kiss.
It's very moist. Oh,
it doesn't even sound like a kiss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Point being,
it's like saying cream.
I don't care for that word.
Chef's cream.
I think it would be great because I think.
Yikes. That, oh, no.
Put it this way.
I will never recover from this.
I'm trying to work through it. One of those teams losing in the first round, it would be a colossal disappointment, you know, because. Yeah. Vegas is the defending Stanley Cup champion that, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but they kind of pushed all their chips all in at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Edmonton losing in the first round.
That would be a disaster.
Right? Now,
losing in the first round, with all due respect to every team in the NHL, would be the biggest disaster. 100%. There's not a single team out there that has more on the line in the playoffs, in my opinion, than the Edmonton Oilers.
Because there would be huge regret, because they would look back and they would say, what if we didn't screw around for the first 20 games of the season and dig this huge hole and, you know, cost our head coach his job and all that? And then they would maybe even look to the end of the season. They're like, what if we didn't leave it till the end of the year when Connor McDavid got hurt to try and not finish second and play the Vegas Golden Knights? So that's what I'm hoping right now, is I hope, basically my dream scenario is Vegas overtakes LA for third in the Pacific, and then LA becomes the second wild card, and Nashville stays locked in as the number one in the wild card.
Okay, another text into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Two games for Pettersson to get to 90 points. Does he get there? I'm trying not to be rude, but my initial reaction is, who cares if he gets to 90 points? I don't know. This might be a tongue-in-cheek text.
Is there a significance Is there a significance that we're missing here?
I don't know. It's a multiple of 10, 90, compared to 88, which he's on now. But if you're looking at
102 last year, so it wouldn't be a career high or anything.
Does he get to 102? Well, he'd have to have a hell of a two games.
God bless. Good
luck. But like in terms of milestones, I think the two big ones have been hit, and that's JT Miller getting to 100 points, and that's a career high for him. And Brock Besser getting to 40 goals when we would have accepted, I don't know, 25 or 30 from Brock Besser, right? And he gets to 40 goals.
If he scored 25 this year, I would have been pretty stoked.
Yeah. Is there anyone else that we're looking at and going like, oh, there's a...
Hughes getting to 90 points was a big deal. Actually,
Hughes getting to 90 points.
Yeah.
And I mean, some people might say Quinn Hughes 20 goals or Dakota Joshua 20 goals. Well, they're each at 17, so seems unlikely based on their pace, but... Who knows? Someone pushed back at me in the inbox, and I have no problem with that. They were just saying like, you know, getting to 70 goals is a big deal. But for me, it's kind of like awards. And the way I think about it is it's nice to get that external, you know, validation or whatever. But, you know, if Quinn Hughes, for example, doesn't win the Norris this year, I will be curious and I'll probably be a little bit upset on behalf of Quinn Hughes if he doesn't win the Norris. But it doesn't change my opinion of Quinn Hughes. I'll still think, well, there's the guy that deserved to win the Norris, and thank God he's on the Canucks. Like, that's it. I'll leave it at that.
You know what?
You know?
I normally agree with you, but I disagree with you with the Norris. I think that is an award of significance this year for a variety of reasons. I think it
matters. Yeah, but you know who votes for it, right?
But I think it matters. But I think it matters. I think it does matter. I know who votes for it, but it's the same people that have voted for it throughout history and time immemorial.
No, but it won't change the fact that I'm still very happy that Quinn Hughes is on the Canucks. Right?
No, like, I know.
So to me, it's just like it's not a game. It's not part of the game. So if Pettersson gets to 90 points, I'll be like, okay, I still have the same concerns and questions and, you know, anticipation for how he's going to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed in with regards to that.
Well, I mean, we had a text in earlier, and I think we've managed to turn a couple people where they were talking about Petey's line mates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, especially come playoff time, I think that the narrative is going to switch from you need to give him better guys to play with to he needs to elevate his line mates. And a lot of that is just the breeding ground, the fertile breeding ground that is playoffs. Now, I say fertile breeding ground because it can grow someone's stature and reputation. The inverse is that it can absolutely destroy someone, right? Especially someone that's getting paid $11.6 million a year annually to ply their trade. He's going to most likely go into this postseason starting with Ilya Mikheyev and Nils Höglander as his wingers. And that is going to be a real talking point unless they blow the door. If they blow the doors off the opposition, they come out and they're putting up numbers every game. Everyone's going to be like, this is great. You know, Petey stepped up to the challenge and everything. If they don't produce, you're going to get the age-old argument coming back. Is this about Petey not being able to lift his line mates or is his line mates not being good enough? Right? Because you can't have a guy playing center as a number one guy, close to $12 million a year in the postseason, not producing. That's one thing I know for a fact. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. The role that he plays, the money that he's paid, he's got to produce in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're going to start to litigate it and relitigate it is, yeah, does he need to play with better guys? Is Tocchet going to have to make adjustments in a series if that doesn't happen? Now, remember, we're talking in hypotheticals here. All this could be moot. He could go in game one of the playoffs and could be shot out of a cannon, and it's like, wow, Petey's back. Look at him go, right?
It's just so important for him to look dangerous and be a dangerous player in terms of matchups in a playoff series because you really do want to have another team's coaching staff looking at the Canucks and going, how are we going to shut these guys down?
Yep.
We got Pettersson on line one. Sounds like he's calling in to the other team. JT Miller on line two.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this line that you can't discount with Joshua and Garland.
I mean, I'll say this. If they do draw Nashville, if they do, that is a hugely beneficial matchup for the Canucks at center. I think the Canucks, outside of Ryan O'Reilly, who we've seen in the postseason before, right? We saw him in the bubble with St. Louis. He's a tough piece of business in the postseason. But after that, they go Jankowski, Novak, and McCarron down the middle.
And that has to be an advantage for the Canucks. Like, it has to be a definitive advantage. Yeah. They have to make that work. Because if you look at the defense, you're kind of like, and the goaltending for that matter, it might be a saw-off, right? You've got a very good Nashville defense with one of the best pairings in the NHL in Ryan McDonagh and Roman Josi.
They're very similar.
And then you've got Juuse Saros in goal. Mm-hmm. There's another text into the Dunbar Lumber text line, unsigned text, must be from Gary. Am I the only one really concerned about Demko's lack of playing time? Having a month off and letting him play a meaningless game isn't much to then thrust him into an intense playoff series. Puts Vancouver in a very tough spot if he has a couple bad games. You are not the only worried person about Thatcher Demko. And we'll talk to Kevin Woodley in about, 11, 12 minutes about this. Demko did say that the Calgary game, which is tomorrow, has been targeted from pretty much the beginning of his injury. He said, our goal since pretty much close to day one was to get back to the Calgary game. Obviously, I do feel good right now. So, yeah, I think the timeline that we've been trying to follow and pushing for has been the Calgary game. So he has been pushing for, and he said that he's been working really hard to get back for the Calgary game. So feel free to be worried about how he's going to look.
I'm going to ask
you. Maybe if the playoffs weren't just around the corner, he'd be out even longer. I'm sure the Canucks would have loved to have had him back earlier. Nobody is thinking that this is ideal, that he might only get one regular season game before the playoffs, because you might, in theory, and we can talk to Kev about this, get him the Calgary game and then be like, all right, rest more, right? Like, you've got back in there, rest more, skip the Winnipeg game, then we'll have a few more days off. So, you know, the Calgary game's on a Tuesday. Game one could start on a Tuesday. So what you could, in theory, do is give Thatcher Demko the game against the Calgary Flames, pray that he looks good, and then say, okay, you got another week off to rest and recuperate, work on your game. We won't even fly you out to Winnipeg. You can just stay in Vancouver and work with Ian Clark on things. But here's the thing, and Laddie, I'll bring you into the conversation here, but we'll get into this with Kev. What if Thatcher Demko plays against the Calgary Flames and doesn't look good? Do you go back and give him another game in Winnipeg where it's a meaningless game, or could be a meaningless game for both teams? So it could almost be like a preseason game. And then, I don't know, is there a risk of re-injuring it? Like, what are the risks there? What are you thinking about all this?
Well, I just worry about the amount of pressure that you're putting on that one game that he's going to get, right? Even if he does look okay, like, that's still a bit of uneasiness going into the playoffs. And, you know, my whole thing is game one of the playoffs, you need to be hit the ground running. There is no ramp once playoffs begin. So that is the really scary thing as a goalie and somebody around goalies. I know it takes a few games to sometimes get your timing back after missing so much time. So I trust Ian Clark and Thatcher Demko know what they're doing, but it's a little concerning.
Am I missing something here? Does it not seem like very obvious that he should just play the last two games of the season, regardless of what the game in Winnipeg means? Just play?
What if he's still lingering injury, like yeah. Ruff said?
But, no, I don't.
But then...
I don't think it's obvious.
I think it's pretty... Like, you give him... It sounds like everything has been, like you said, ramped up to this point where he wanted to return and the team's comfortable with him returning against Calgary.
Isn't it sometimes like when you're back from an injury, that game can be almost quite demanding on you physically and mentally? So I'm supporting playing him in a game and then giving him a rest.
But he's going to have to do that in the playoffs anyway if you're going anywhere.
It's more just the timing.
But then you get
for
another
me,
week at least to prepare for that.
It's the timing and the speed of NHL hockey. Like, you can practice all you want. Nothing will imitate the speed and fluidity of an NHL game in front of you. And hey, if he looks terrible in that one game he gets before the playoffs, it's not going to inspire a lot of confidence.
Well, hopefully the red-hot Andre Kuzmenko is going to be able to test Thatcher Demko a lot.
Andre Kuzmenko. Was it 9 goals in 9 games or something like that? I don't know what to say other than...
He already has played the Canucks once, and he didn't do anything in that game.
I keep calling it...
He's biding his time.
Every game that Kuzmenko comes back is a homecoming game, too, by the way. We're just going to throw that out there. Because someone was trying
to... 4 years from now?
Yeah, just every game. He's the happiest guy. By the way, there's a lot of articles that have... Because it's been a rough end of the season for Calgary, right? So Flames media, all the stories right now are like, this Kuzmenko story sure is interesting. Do you think he can keep it up? And I hate to tell them what the end of it is. I mean, I think I know, but
yeah. We got a question. And do we even know yet what Demko's injury was? Yeah, it was a knee. Even Demko admitted that. Said it was a knee injury.
Yeah.
So listen, I like this text. I am shocked, but I actually agree with Halford on this one.
And he called me Halpern.
Yeah, I think that's your autocorrect, Halpern.
How is Jeff Halpern an autocorrect? I mean, good for him. He had a better career than I did. He earned it. But I don't know how Halpern is the autocorrect.
Gary texts in, play both. He has till Tuesday to rest after Winnipeg.
That's right.
Or until Tuesday to recover from yet another injury because the Canucks have overplayed him in a tough situation.
Ah, do you mean re-aggravating my injury? Yes. Okay, we got one final hour to come on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Kevin Woodley, NHL.com and Ingoal Magazine is going to join us, and we're going to do some What We Learns in the final half hour of the program. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.